Hello there. You're listening to the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 29th of September 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity Beacon Centre. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have myself, Rob, Mina, Ed, Colin, Helen, Tanya, Ian, Simon, Angela, Liz, Christine, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, a feature on superstitions, the weather, news about organisation ICANN, sounds of nature, and rounding all that off, we have some school day memories from the BBC journalist Peter White, who's known for his Radio 4 show, In Touch. But first, we have our Guess the Sound quiz. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later, alongside the usual quiz answers. Now we start, as always, with some local news, brought to us by Angela, Liz, Ian, myself Rob, and first up, it's Christine.
A music and comedy festival held in Wolverhampton has been branded a flop following poor ticket sales and attendances to some of the shows. Councillor Ellis Terrell told a Wolverhampton Council Scrutiny Board meeting that some of the Relight Festival events only sold around 1% of tickets at full price, with many being given out for free like confetti. Board members agreed to hold an inquiry into the authority's cultural events programme to look at the cost of hosting festivals and what impact they have on the city's economy. The Relight Festival took place in a big top at West Park from August 20th to September 5th, featuring music, comedy, sport, film and family events. Shows such as the headline set from comedian Bill Bailey drew the crowds and rave reviews. But Councillor Terrell said figures showed some events at Relight were barely 10% full. Just have a look at some of the ticket sales where the council has basically given away tickets like confetti because they couldn't sell them. They were chucking them out. Councillor Phil Bateman said he agreed scrutiny should look at these issues, but added he was irked by some of Councillor Terrell's comments. He said, "After many years here in Wolverhampton, all we've ever heard is our support for Birmingham. It's right and proper we should put stuff on ourselves for our own people. I think the issue revolves around the relevance and the quality. I don't think we should shy away from that. Good shows and bad shows take place in the most salubrious of places. Let's not constrain Wolverhampton's ambition. We're not just there to support Birmingham, and we're here to look after our own citizens and make Wolverhampton a better place. Let's not decry ourselves."
A Black Country council has come under fire after documents used to assist the auditor were not delivered for the second year running. The auditor noted information needed to complete land, building and housing valuations had not been complete. The council holds a wide portfolio of land and property that supports a range of services. Valuations are used to ensure councils can accurately report on the value of their portfolio, as is their statutory obligation, and to be competitively priced. Mark Stocks, external auditor at Grant Thornton LLP, who delivered the presentation, said, "We note that the information needed to conclude our work on land, building and housing valuation has not all been made available to us. This is the second year that this has occurred. We have escalated this to the chief executive and the responsible director. This is an area of concern for us, and we considered that this reflects poorly on the governance of the council." He added, "Action is needed to resolve this issue and strengthen controls in this area for future years." In all her 9 years of sitting on the audit committee, Councillor Jackie Cowell, who represents Quarry Bank and Dudley Wood, said it was the first time a serious concern had been raised about Dudley Council's audit and finances. She said the auditor didn't mince his words in his opening remarks. He drew attention to and said it wasn't acceptable. "There's no real excuse for somebody like a metropolitan council like Dudley to be not supplying the auditor with the paperwork when they need it. It was very clear that he was not happy with Dudley and we needed to get this sorted. He made it abundantly clear that he will not tolerate a repeat performance next year."
Eligible adults across the Black Country are now being invited for their coronavirus booster jab. Text messages and letters are being sent out from the NHS and appointments can be booked through the National Booking System. Adults eligible for boosters include those aged 50 and over, people living and working in care homes for the elderly, and frontline health and social care workers. All those who are clinically extremely vulnerable and anyone aged 16 to 49 who were included in priority groups during the initial vaccine rollout will also be able to receive their booster jab. Appointments for a booster dose can only be booked if it's been at least 6 months since their second dose of the vaccine. Sally Roberts, Chief Nursing Officer for Black Country and West Birmingham Clinical Commissioning Group, said, "Booster jabs are effective for topping up the protection of those who have already had both doses of the COVID-19 vaccine, especially as we approach the winter months. The booster programme will be rolled out to the same priority groups as the first COVID-19 vaccination, and I urge anyone who receives a letter or text from the NHS to book their jabs as soon as possible. For those who haven't yet been contacted, we will be in touch when it's your turn, so please wait until you hear from us." In line with new guidance set out by the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, people should receive either one dose of the Pfizer vaccine or half a dose of the Moderna vaccine. That means for some people, their booster dose may be different from the vaccines they had for their first and second dose.
More than 20,000 safeguarding concerns were flagged about vulnerable adults in the Black Country in Staffordshire during the first year of the coronavirus pandemic, figures show. Age UK said abuse and neglect may have thrived behind closed doors throughout periods of lockdown, contributing to a stark national rise in the number of concerns flagged with councils between April 2020 and March this year. NHS digital figures show 3,365 concerns about adults with care and support needs were reported to the council in Wolverhampton in that period, up from the 2,670 recorded the year before, a 26% difference. A further 3,815 concerns about adults with care and support needs were reported to the authority in Sandwell, up from the 3,080 recorded the previous year, a 24% difference. There was an 11% difference in Walsall, with 2,565 concerns reported to the council, up from the 2,310 recorded the year before. Over in the Dudley area, it remained roughly the same as the previous year, with 5,295 concerns reported to the council. But the figures show the numbers in Staffordshire fell during the period to 3,060, down from 4,065, a 25% drop. If councils believe a vulnerable adult is experiencing or is at risk of abuse or neglect, they must carry out a Section 42 inquiry to determine whether action should be taken. Around 2,960 such inquiries were launched in Staffordshire during the year to March, while there were 1,820 in Sandwell, 760 in Walsall, 465 in Wolverhampton and 300 in Dudley. Councillor Nicholas Barlow, Dudley Council's Cabinet Member for Health and Adult Social Care, said it's really reassuring to see that people are raising safeguarding concerns through the appropriate channels. It is only by people referring these issues to us that we are able to take action.
Bus users have hit out at disgraceful delays to services which have left people across the region stranded at bus stops for hours on end. National Express has apologised to passengers after admitting driver shortages had contributed to services being delayed and in some cases cancelled altogether. Passengers waiting at stops at Wolverhampton bus station have demanded urgent action to improve unreliable services. One man, who did not want to be named, said, "It's becoming disgraceful and I'm waiting more and more for buses. I don't know when they're coming or not. I don't drive, so I need to take buses. And it's becoming really bad at times when I'm waiting in the rain and the services don't turn up when they're meant to, or sometimes not at all. Something needs to be done as people like me are going to be stuck otherwise." A bus user from All Saints said it had become common for buses to be up to 40 minutes late, while Greg Heath from Dudley said getting the one service was down to potluck. "Sometimes it might be half an hour late, sometimes it won't be there at all," he said. "The actual times the buses arrive bears no resemblance to the timetable anymore, that's for sure." National Express has apologised to passengers and announced changes to some timetables from Sunday. A spokesperson said, "We're really sorry that some of our customers have been experiencing delays to their bus journeys lately. Various issues have been affecting the punctuality and reliability of our services recently, including continuing sickness and self-isolation due to the pandemic, as well as the UK-wide difficulties in recruiting drivers and many large-scale sets of roadworks causing congestion and delaying buses. From October 3rd, we're temporarily tweaking the timetables of some Birmingham and Black Country services to improve their reliability." Now it's time to hand over to Helen, who has for us this week's Beacon Update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre. Well, another week's gone by and it's time for another update on everything that's been happening at the charity. And this week, we're starting with some exciting news. We're so pleased to announce that we've launched our new campaign, Bright for Sight, because, well, sometimes all you need is a splash of colour. If you're living with sight loss, you'll probably know that colours and contrast can make a huge difference when it comes to making the most of your vision. That's why we're asking you to wear the brightest outfit you can find for Beacon. Join in the fun with us on our first ever Bright for Sight Day on Thursday, the 14th of October. That's World Sight Day, in case you didn't know. You can even get involved if you're part of a local organisation. Why not ask your friends, pupils or colleagues to get involved and make a donation to help support our work? Or you can donate £5 now by texting BRIGHT to 70085. Texts cost £5 plus one standard rate message. You can also find out more or donate online at www.beaconvision.org/bright-4-sight. We need any help with taking part. Email our fundraising team. It's supporters@beaconvision.org. Help make the future bright for someone with sight loss. And don't forget, tag us in your pictures. #bright4beacon. Now, next 6 weeks, we'd like to say a massive thank you to our friends at Specsavers Hales Owen, who have just taken part in a charity walk in aid of Beacon. The team switched their uniforms to hiking boots after they closed their store last Sunday and set off on a 5-mile walk around Liso's Park to support people with sight loss. We so appreciate their support. Now, this is your official 2022 countdown. There are now less than 100 days to go until the start of a new year. How did that happen? So, we thought it was a perfect opportunity to let you know that we're now taking orders for the 2022 VIP calendar and diary collection. Their large print and clear contrast are ideal for people with sight loss, and they're one of our most popular products. Get your order in now. call our sightless advisors on 01902 880 111 or email inquiries@beaconvision.org. We've also recently been celebrating National Eye Health Week, and to mark it, we shared some of our top tips about how you can look after your eyes if you're on a screen. Whether you're using a mobile, tablet or desktop computer, it's important to be screen smart and take regular breaks to give your eyes a rest. So, what can you do? First up, take breaks from the screen and use a 20-20-20 rule. That's every 20 minutes, look 20 foot away from the screen for 20 seconds. It's also important to check your lighting. If it's reflecting on your screen, it will make it harder to see. Another thing you can do is positioning yourself 18 to 24 inches away from a computer monitor and make sure you're looking slightly down towards your screen. Lastly, and one of the simplest things you can do is check your text size. Don't squint to read it, just make it bigger. Right, that's it for this week. Hopefully, I'll be back to speak to you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Cheers for that, Helen. Now we roll over into our next block of local news. And starting us off, we go over to Ian.
Health chiefs labelled anti-vax protesters targeting schools in the region disappointing, as they urged people to ignore the myths and get the jab. Anti-vaxxers gathered on Wolverhampton's Ring Road last week in protest against the latest rollout of vaccines for those aged 12 to 15. And schools, including Beacon Hill Academy in Sedgley, have also been sent letters from campaigners against the move too. Jabs will start in hundreds of secondary schools across the country this week, with the NHS vaccination programme rolling out to others in the coming weeks. A group of around 20 protesters gathered on either side of the A4150 between Ring Road St Andrews and Ring Road St Peter's Wolverhampton during the evening rush hour, holding large yellow signs. Dudley Council's health chief said it was disappointing that people wanted to spread myths about the vaccination, when it is actually our greatest defence against COVID-19. Meanwhile, one Black Country school has revealed a number of anti-vax letters in recent days. Sukhjot Dharmi, head teacher at Beacon Hill Academy, said, "The academy has received two letters from the public expressing their disapproval of the vaccination programme. Our parents and carers have been very supportive of everything we are doing to keep our learners safe and keeping the transmission rate down. It's important to recognise that schools are not administering the vaccination programme. We are facilitating this in the same way we do with all vaccinations. The Academy is committed to ensuring that over the coming weeks and months, we do everything we can to minimise the disruption to schools and education and welcome any measure aimed at doing this. We respect the choice of individuals and parents and carers not to have the vaccine, but will continue to support the NHS as we always have done." Dudley Council's health chief said it was disappointing that people wanted to spread myths about the vaccination when it is actually our greatest defence against COVID-19.
Angry residents say they feel ignored by a consultation into plans to build thousands of homes on greenbelt sites across the region. Under the Black Country plan, more than 7,000 houses will go up on greenbelt land as part of a battle to hit what council say is an unrealistic target of 76,000 homes by 2039. But residents have described a consultation process, which is just a fortnight to run, as overly complicated and a done deal, and that precious green sites will be lost for good. Tory MPs in the region have spoken out against the plan, and Shadow Community Secretary Steve Reed says people are not being listened to. In the heart of the Black Country, just a stone's throw away from the permanently busy A449, lies a plot of land, one of dozens being earmarked for development, that is beloved by thousands of people in the surrounding community. For residents, the site off Holbeach Lane in Wall Heath offers respite in the middle of a built-up area, an oasis of tranquility to escape to for a few moments for some peace and quiet. During the pandemic, the field became even more vital, serving as a place where people could meet safely outdoors around the multitude of wildlife species that call it home. But if developers have their way, this prime plot of greenbelt land will soon be gone, flattened to make way for a new housing estate that by the end of the next decade could contain 330 homes. According to council chiefs, housing targets for the region, which are devised by ministers and implemented on a local level, cannot be met with brownfield sites alone. Unless the targets are reduced, they say, developing on the green belt is inevitable.
Lanes on a busy route into Wolverhampton will be closed as 12 weeks of renovation work get underway. The repair work along a section of the A449 Stafford Road between Bushbury Lane Island and the Oxley Moor Road junction is due to start this week. The £480,000 works will require lane closures to protect workers on both the north and southbound sides of the road for the 12-week scheme. But the work will be done during off-peak hours in a bid to minimise disruption. Wolverhampton Council is making the investment to improve unsightly damaged barriers and overgrown vegetation along the central reservation. Broken wooden fencing and a metal pedestrian barrier will be replaced, new curbs will be installed and overgrown planting cut back. Councillor Stephen Evans, Wolverhampton Council Cabinet Member for City Environment and Climate Change, said this is one of the main routes into the city of Wolverhampton. We are investing £480,000 to make improvements that will make it safer and enhance the appearance of this key arterial route. There is old wooden fencing along part of the route, which is in an extremely poor condition, and in places it is covered with overgrown plants. There is also a metal pedestrian barrier which is damaged and looks very tired with paint peeling off it. Replacing all of these will really enhance the route and make it safer for motorists and pedestrians, and I'm pleased to confirm that trees along the route are staying put. We have programmed the works during off-peak hours to cause the minimum amount of disruption, and we apologise in advance for any delays that are caused by this important scheme. The work will be taking place between 9:30 a.m. and 3 p.m.
A Black Country MP has been promoted in the latest government reshuffle. Suzanne Webb has been appointed to the post of Senior Parliamentary Private Secretary at the Ministry of Defence. The Stourbridge MP, who was first elected in 2019, says she has been tasked with being the eyes and ears for MOD ministers in the House of Commons, ensuring MPs' issues, concerns and questions are fed back. She will serve under Ben Wallace MP, who kept his position as Defence Secretary in last week's reshuffle, which saw the West Midlands lose all of its cabinet representation. Mrs. Webb said she was honoured to be given a position in an absolutely key government ministry. She added, "One of the most important responsibilities of any administration is defence of the realm, and I intend to work my socks off to help ministers and the government in this area. The UK faces new and evolving threats all the time, and it will continue to play its part in the rules-based system, as shown by our recent AUKUS security pact with Australia and the United States." Last week's reshuffle saw Boris Johnson sack Gavin Williamson as Education Secretary, while Amanda Milling was removed as Tory Chair and Wolverhampton-born Robert Jenrick lost his position as Housing Secretary. Mrs. Milling has been appointed as a Minister in the Foreign Office, where she joins Aldridge Brownhills MP Wendy Morton. Walsall North MP Eddie Hughes remains the rough sleeping minister, while House Owen and Rowley Regis MP James Morris stays in the Whip's office.
Police are warning residents in the Black Country after a spate of catalytic converter thefts in the area. 8 incidents were reported to West Midlands Police in just one day last week. Catalytic converters were stolen in Tiverdale, Briley Hill and Pedmore, and thieves tried to steal a further 3 catalytic converters in Quarry Bank, Halezone and Wolverhampton, but were unsuccessful. Officers also received a call about men with weapons attempting to steal cars in West Bromwich. A spokesman for West Midlands Police said, "We think the same group of people are responsible, and we are doing everything we can to trace them. The suspects have weapons and could be dangerous. If you see them, please don't confront them. Call us on 999 instead. If you've got any other information that could help our investigation, please let us know." Catalytic converters are devices on the exhaust of cars that reduce toxic gases and pollutants. They contain precious metals, making them a target for criminals. The most commonly targeted vehicles are hybrid ones, as the catalytic converter is used less often, and as a result, the metals are not as corroded, making them more valuable. Anyone with information should call West Midlands Police on 101. Alternatively, you can call Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111.
Now with a cohort of questions all about time, we head over to Mina, who as always has this week's quiz questions for us.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. Who said that our faces were older than our feet? Question 2. Where is the oldest clock on Earth? Question 3. Which mammal is known to be at least 211 years old? Question 4. What time did Levi Hutchins have to get up for work? Question 5. What is used to regulate Big Ben's clock? And finally, question 6. In what year was UK time standardised and called railway time? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show. But for now, good luck.
Just for those questions, Mina. I'll have a think on those before time gets ahead of me. Up next, though, we have some more local news. And starting us off, it's Christine.
Horns sounded and well-wishers lined the streets as some 80 trucks formed a convoy through the Black Country to raise awareness of organ donation. The King's Wimford Charity Truck Convoy took in Bilston, Wolverhampton, Coesley, Dudley's Priory Road, Pensnet, Russell's Hall, King's Wimford and Stourport on Saturday in memory of much-loved wife and mum Rachel Day, who died in August after a brave battle against liver disease. Each driver made a donation and the proceeds will be donated to the Queen Elizabeth Liver Trust and the Mary Stevens Hospice in Stourbridge. "This is the seventh convoy," said Rachel's son Andrew, aged 27. "We have done it every year since 2014 with the aim of raising awareness of organ donation. Rachel Day had a liver transplant on Christmas Day 2006, but her illness led to her body rejecting the organ and 3 years ago it began to fail. Although King's College London placed her on their waiting list for surgery, the pandemic caused further delays, which meant she could not get a transplant in time. Rachel died aged 46 on August 16th this year, leaving husband Andrew, 48, children Andrew, 27, Michaela, 25, Robert, 21, and Joe, 20, as well as 6 grandchildren. Together with husband Andrew, a truck driver himself, she had campaigned in support of organ donation awareness and organised the annual convoys. Andrew wished to thank all of the truckers who participated in the convoy, A.W. Pallant in Bilston for hosting the gathering trucks, and everyone who showed their support on the procession route.
Dudley Council are set to consult on an alternative method to kill weeds in public green spaces. In a report debated at the Housing and Public Realm Scrutiny Committee on Wednesday, the authority is looking to reduce and or eradicate the use of glyphosate for managing weed control in the borough. Glyphosate was first introduced in 1971. The weed killer, when sprayed, can move throughout the plant, killing roots and shoots. After the weed killer has been sprayed, it can take a few weeks to take effect. It is one of few products left available to successfully control invasive species, such as Japanese knotweed and giant hogweed, which can plague Dudley's grass edges, shrub beds and pedestrianised areas. Local authorities are coming under increased pressure to seek alternatives to glyphosate as the public becomes more aware of its potentially damaging effects on local green spaces. 3 members of the public spoke in favour of seeking alternatives to glyphosate. Carl Denning, who is visually impaired and lives in Upper Gornal, raised concerns about the use of glyphosate on his guide dog named Bilko. He said, "I've been told this glyphosate is a type of spray. It obviously goes over the pavement and the grass where they're actually applying it. Being visually impaired, I can't actually see it. And to be fair, my guide dog probably won't either. There's the chance of damaging my dog's paws with the weed killer. And since it's chemical, there's always the transfer of chemical burns." They openly say that the weed killer sticks to plants, so I would have assumed that it sticks to dog and animal fur too. I'm worried that they might ingest a chemical too. I would prefer to see rewilding, letting plants grow with wild flowers in places and on all curb lines, and everything else actually removed by hand or by machine.
A static caravan has been allowed to remain at a sports club almost 70 years after temporary permission was first granted. The mobile home is needed for security purposes at Wolverhampton Rugby Union Football Club, a report to South Staffordshire Council's planning committee said. Temporary stationing of a caravan at the Castlecroft grounds was first approved in 1952, and the consent has been renewed several times since, with a replacement mobile home allowed in 2011 and previous last five-year consent granted in 2016. South Staffordshire Council's planning committee unanimously agreed to allow the static caravan to remain on the site for another 5 years. The club is located in the Greenbelt, where development considered inappropriate is restricted unless it is considered that there are very special circumstances. The committee report said the applicants have stated that there are ongoing issues with crime at the site. The permanent presence of a groundsman slash caretaker at the site would deter potential criminals and alleviate the problems with antisocial behaviour associated with youths using the car park. This would be of benefit both to the clubs and the site, and to the residents of the adjacent Castlecroft apartments. In addition to the security benefit derived from the presence of the groundsman, there has been a static caravan at the site which has been in place for nearly 65 years. The mobile home is a temporary structure and would be on site for a temporary period of time.
A popular music venue, which has run as part of Wolverhampton's civic halls for more than a decade, is to remain closed. Wolverhampton Council said the Slade Rooms on Broad Street, which has been shut since early last year, was not able to reopen due to operational issues. The authority is understood to be considering whether to renew its lease on the 500 capacity venue, which it took over in 2010 to replace the Little Civic. Sources have said that any renewal is highly unlikely, with the site considered surplus to requirements once the long-delayed budget-busting revamp of the Civic Halls on North Street is complete next year. Over the years, the Slade Rooms had been used for more intimate gigs and has hosted the city's literature festival. It has put on shows by bands including Embrace, Pop Will Eat Itself, Buzzcocks, Morbid Angel, Spacement Apes and the Blue Tones. Currently, booked events and recent performances have been rescheduled to other venues, including Pete Doherty's show last Sunday, which was moved to KK Steel Mill. Councillor Steve Evans, Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Events, said the Slade Rooms had been closed since the pandemic started, and due to a number of ongoing operational issues, it is not currently possible to reopen the venue while we review future options. The city is well served by a number of other small-sized venues, such as Bilston Town Hall, Newhampton Arts Centre, Lighthouse, Arena Theatre and The Robin, and we are working to reschedule acts that were due to play at the Slade Rooms to alternative sites.
Dudley Council has been shortlisted as National Home Builder of the Year at this year's UK Housing Awards. The council has been building new council homes across the borough over the last few years to add to its housing stock. It has been shortlisted in the awards organised by Inside Housing and the Chartered Institute of Housing in recognition of one of its most recent developments, which saw a piece of disused land off the Broadway in Norton, Stourbridge, transformed into a bungalow complex. The 10-property development, known as Maybank Fields, includes a range of 1, 2 and 3-bedroom bungalows, all with level access living. Six of the 10 properties have been specifically designed for people who use wheelchairs and specialist facilities such as height-adjustable kitchen units and high-tech toilets have been included where required. All the bungalows were fitted with external electric or vehicle charging points. Councillor Laura Taylor-Childs, Dudley Council's Cabinet Member for Housing and Community Services, said, "I've seen firsthand the quality of council homes we are building for local people, and I'm delighted the work of all the teams involved in making this happen has been recognised nationally. Maybank Fields is exceptional and a development we are incredibly proud of. The homes have been created with the needs of local people in mind, and we've received such positive feedback since people moved in. The winners will be announced on Thursday, November 25th.
Now, with news about a new charitable organisation called ICAN, we have Mina.
Hi, it's Mina. I would like to share some news about ICAN, which is a newly formed charity supporting the sight loss community. ICAN is a support group which was launched in April earlier this year. It originally started as a community group to help bring like-minded individuals together. Myself and Josh Sandu, who first started volunteering to help the VI community back in 2005, are the founders of ICAN. Josh recently worked in the fundraising team at the Beacon Centre, but myself and Josh wanted to continue to help the sight loss community, especially with me being severely visually impaired myself. I knew of many others suffering with the lack of support available over the last couple of years in the West Midlands. So we both felt very passionate about creating social activities to support the VI community, especially after the coronavirus pandemic, which has had a huge negative impact on the sight loss community. We originally started with a very small group, around 5 VI members, but within 4 months, we've had over 40 VI members join us at some point at the events, along with over 15 volunteers. With the high demand and reaction, along with the support the public wanted to give, we were recommended to turn ICAN into a charity, which now officially is. Over the last few months, we have had various activities available once a month for people to get involved in within the sight loss community, from pub meals, quiz nights, a VIP day at Dunstall Racecourse, and most recently a meal and drinks with our trustees of ICAN. Our fantastic supportive trustees include Keith Birkinshaw, who is a winner of 2 FA Cups and UEFA Cup as a manager of Tottenham Hotspur. Keith has a huge affiliation with the Black Country, as Wolves was his first professional club as a player, as well as then going on to managing West Bromwich Albion FC. Our second trustee is Louise Connop. Louise is the engagement manager of Thomas Pocklington Trust, which is a charity to support and empower people living with sight loss. Her goal in life is to encourage and empower others with sight loss. Our third trustee is Yusuf Malumbo. He's no stranger to the Black Country, a cult hero at West Bromwich Albion, having spent 6 years at the Hawthorns. Yusuf is experienced in charity work, having previously formed a foundation to help underprivileged children. He will be a prominent figure to drive the success of ICAN. Now, if you require any further information about ICAN or how to book our activities, please do not hesitate to contact me, Mina Ratu, on 078-007-37851 or Josh Sandu on 079-847-12961.
You can find ICAN on Facebook
which is EYECAN. We look forward to seeing you soon.
Up next is our final block of local news, brought to us by Christine, Ed, Ian, Liz, and up first, it's Angela.
A rail station is aiming to conquer the world with help from its furry companion. Stourbridge Junction Railway Station is aiming to go one better and win the 2021 World Cup of Stations and is already deploying station cat George on social media to get nominations in. The station was runner-up in the 2020 World Cup, narrowly losing out to Glasgow Queen's Square Station in the public vote, with the Scottish station gaining 31.3% of the vote to Stourbridge Junction's 30%. The station was able to claim the title of England's top station, having finished ahead of London's King's Cross and Huddersfield in the voting. And 7-year-old Moggy George is already looking ahead to playing off for the title. George, who has more than 29,000 followers on social media, has become something of a local celebrity after making his home at the station in December 2017. This year's World Cup of Stations started on Twitter on September the 20th and will run until October the 15th, including a nominations phase, knockout group stages, semi-finals and the final. In 2021, the World Cup of Stations is focusing on the stations that help passengers travel to the people, places and activities they love. There are 12 categories that people can choose from to nominate a station, including adventure, history, nature, shopping, city breaks, enthusiasts, sports stadiums and food. Nominations are open until October the 3rd, with the group stages set to start on October the 11th after a judging period.
A student became king for the day after returning back to school as a world champion. Joshua Badden was welcomed back to St Peter's School in Wolverhampton by his fellow pupils and teachers after becoming the strongest bench press champion in his age group in the world. Joshua took part in the single bench press lift at the World Powerlifting Championships in Sardinia and won with a final lift of 110 kilograms, earning him the title of world champion in the 14 to 16 age group. The 15-year-old also unofficially broke the world record of 113.5 kilograms after lifting 116 kilograms in the training room. He received a hero's welcome on his return to the school on Thursday, with bunting all around the school and a crown and British flag lent to him by the history department for the day. Head of English Claire Crick had been closely following his progress and said the school had been told of his success early on Monday. She said, "We received an email from Joshua's father with the pictures and videos of his lifts on the arena floor. So this was shared with staff and the student groups to let them know of Joshua's great news. They could watch the videos of him competing and see the pictures of him holding his trophy up with the British flag and showing off that big cheeky grin we all know about." Miss Crick said the school as a whole was very proud of him and spoke about the maturity Joshua had shown towards it. She said, "He has been so humble with it all and he's just keen to let people know that you can achieve anything in whatever you do if you put your mind to it."
A man who believes he unearthed a meteorite and a Roman figure while digging up his drive is asking archaeologists or anyone with historical knowledge to help him to learn the truth. Andrew Priest of Redfly Lane, Pensnet, suspects the items are significant and could help the community learn more about the history of the area. "What I have found has blown me away," said Mr. Priest, 67, who made his discovery 2 years ago. "I was digging my drive and went down about 1 meter, unearthing a couple of rocks which had been shaped by antlers and another rock that I believe is a meteorite. I have two magnets stuck to the rock. The only rocks that magnets cling to are meteorites. In the same week, I found what I believe is a Roman votive offering, which the Romans would make to placate local gods. Part of it is a base, a lady's feet standing on flowers and wearing ballet shoes. She has no head, but is finely carved and is wearing blue, the colouring of which could only have come from a mine in Afghanistan at that time. Mr. Priest, who has autism, is interested in Stone Age, Iron Age and Bronze Age history and has looked into every nook and cranny of the area. He took the meteorite, which is about a foot long by 10 inches, to Dudley Museum and the Roman offering to the Small Finds office at Birmingham Museum, but says they raised no interest and were handed back. "I was not disappointed," said Mr. Priest. "I am quite used to that reaction. However, he does want to learn more about the items and would like to hear from anyone who may be able to shine a light on them. If you can help Mr. Priest, he can be contacted on 01384-261-602.
Gourmet meals and lots of walks have helped a Black Country dog to live to a ripe old age. Braga, a Great Dane, is currently enjoying his 13th year with regular walks from his owner, Martin Bamford, around their home in Cinder Hill between Sedgley and Bilston. The 12-year-old Braga was born in 2009, and Martin Bamford said he had been utterly spoiled by the family since they got him. He said, "Over the years, we've cooked him a full chicken every day, so he'd always took into that all minced meat and spaghetti alongside his dog biscuits. There were times when I'd get back from work and I'd be having a jacket potato with a salad and he's there with a full roast chicken, so he'd be eating better than I would." Mr. Bamford said Braga, who was named after the city in Portugal, was very old by Great Dane standards, with the average age usually around 8 years old for a Great Dane. He said Braga was a very loyal and very friendly dog and a great friend to his son Romeo. He said he's very loving and loyal and has grown up with my son, who's 11, so they go on a lot of walks together. We ended up getting him as I liked the colour of him, because he's blue, as well as being a very good-looking proper dog. He also described Braga as a mini-celebrity, describing the scene when he goes to a car boot sale. He said, "If I do a car boot sale, people will come over to him and have their photos taken with him, as will little children who stand next to him. He's a very popular and loyal dog, and I'm delighted to see him reach 12 years old."
Stars from across the Black Country and Staffordshire are taking to the stage in School of Rock at Wolverhampton's Grand Theatre. The show, which has broken out of the West End, stars a number of local connections, including a Staffordshire-born Jake Sharp from Lichfield in the leading role of Dewey Finn. It also features performer and ensemble member Harveen Mann from Wolverhampton, Emerson Sutton from Wordsley and Joseph Shepherd from Woodsetton in Dudley. And Associate Director Chris Key is also from Bridge North. Jake Sharp said, "It's great to be back in Wolverhampton on home turf at a beautiful theatre like the Grand. I'm very proud to be leading the show now, a role which I had played before in the West End, but to perform it to a home crowd is going to be so, so special. I can't wait." Harveen Mann said, "It is so emotional for me to be back in Wolverhampton doing what I love, performing. I've been so lucky to have travelled the world doing my job, but I have never taken to the stage right here at the Grand. My first visit to the Grand Theatre was as a three-year-old watching Postman Pat. I can even remember where I sat, in the stalls at the front, with my granddad and my mum. I'm really passionate about representation in the musical theatre industry. South Asian actors represent only 7.5% of the West End, which is tiny, and it's really important for me to play roles that aren't South Asian specific. And it really doesn't matter who you are, your race, the colour of your skin, anybody can play any part, and it's a really important lesson that people need to learn. It doesn't matter who you are, a part is a part. When I first saw West Side Story here at the Grand Theatre, it was the first time I saw somebody of brown skin on stage and I thought, oh, I can do that too. And now it's my career. If I can be that girl who the younger generation see, then I will be. To be that girl in my hometown of Wolverhampton is just indescribable joy."
Now head over to our fount of knowledge, Flashback Roger, with his Did You Know feature.
Hello again, everyone. I hope that you've all been keeping okay and wondering, what on earth has he got for us this week? Well, so did I. But wonder no more, because here we go with this week's selection of goodies. Now then, did you know that? According to Albert Einstein, time goes slower the closer you get to the centre of the Earth. So in that case, your face gets older than your feet. Well, that must be true, because my face is certainly more wrinkly than my feet. The bowhead whale, also known as the Arctic whale, is one of the longest living mammals on Earth. The oldest known bowhead whale is at least 211 years old, and there are whales swimming around with tips of 200-year-old ivory spears still lodged in their flesh. And the oldest working clock in the world is in Salisbury Cathedral. This mechanical clock dates all the way back to 1386. The Salisbury clock was actually replaced in 1984, and the original model wasn't rediscovered in 1929. A full restoration was completed in 1956. And the first American alarm clock was invented in Concord, New Hampshire, in 1787 by Levi Hutchins. It was never patented, and it only rang at one time, 4 a.m. in the morning, to wake him up for work. And did you know that old copper pennies are used to adjust the time in London's Big Ben clock? Adding or removing a penny to the pendulum changes its centre of mass and can alter the clock speed by 0.4 of a second every day. And our standardised time system was first used by British Railways on the December the 1st, 1847, when they switched from local mean time, which varied from place to place, to Greenwich Mean Time, GMT. It was also given the name Railway Time, reflecting the important role railway companies played in bringing it about. The vast majority of Britain's public clocks were standardised to GMT by 1855. Well, how about that then? It's all about time then this week, and they say time flies when you're enjoying yourself. So I hope that this little spot, or your weekly issue, come to that, never drags for you. Any road up, talking about time, it's time I cleared off to find myself a nice cup of tea and a sarnie. So till next week, I'll just say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Thank you for those fantastic facts, Roger. Up next, we now have Mina, who has for us a weather update.
The weather for this week ahead looks to be a total washout, with rain expected all week. Temperatures will be steady throughout the week, hovering between 15 to 16 degrees. UV levels are expected to be low throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:16 a.m. for the sunrise and 6:36 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday, 1st of October, we have light rain and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 16 degrees. On Saturday 2nd through to Monday 4th of October, we have light rain showers and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 15 degrees. Moving to Tuesday 5th of October, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 15 degrees. On Wednesday 6th of October, we have light rain showers and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 15 degrees. And on Thursday 7th of October, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 16 degrees. So that's your forecast for this week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Now we have our sportsman Ian giving you all the latest football news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion.
Hello, I'm Ian, and here's your latest football news. Almost 10 months to the day since Raul Jimenez suffered a horrific fractured skull injury, the striker netted his first goal of the season to hand Wolves a 1-0 win away at Southampton. But Bruno Lage's brave team selection seemed destined for failure after his side flattered to deceive in the first half and failed to seriously test the Saints' defence. They marginally improved in the second half before Jimenez latched onto a long ball from goalkeeper José Sá just after the hour mark. The striker danced past two defenders and calmly slotted the ball home in front of the away end. Wolves had to endure some serious Southampton pressure in the closing stages of the game, but they stood firm to pick up their second win of the season, with Jimenez's goal coming only 3 days before the 10-month anniversary of his injury. After the match, Large said, "We tried to play the way we want to play. The changes I did to the team were to have more of the ball. We saw what Southampton did against Man City and Newcastle, and they are a good team. What Ralf Hasenhüttl did in his 3 years here is very good. When you play against this team, they have the ball and come with a big intensity to press high. We tried to do little things different and get João and Leander to find spaces in between the lines. That's why Daniel and Huang started to have more of the ball. The first 45 minutes we managed the ball and were solid, and after found the right spaces to create our chances. We started with a good chance from Semedo. The plan was to keep the ball and wait for our solutions. We need to understand the spaces the opponent gives. The team were clever to understand that and what spaces to go to attack. It was a good result for us. 3 good points. We are happy with that." On Saturday, a late brace from Carlin Grant saw Albion return to winning ways after they overcame QPR at the Hawthorns. The Baggies welcomed Mark Warburton's side, having put in underwhelming displays against Millwall, Derby and Preston North End in their last 3 outings, matches that all ended in draws. But they put in a significantly improved performance against the Hoops to eventually take all 3 points. Valerian Ismail's side endured a nightmare start when they fell behind after just 60 seconds to Andre Gray's goal. But keeping the ball on the deck more and playing with more composure, they consistently got into dangerous areas. They had some good fortune when they pulled level in the 75th minute with goalkeeper Seni Dieng inexplicably fumbling the ball into his own net. But Albion's winner in the 88th minute was an excellent move that saw Jordan Hughill and Callum Robinson combine before Grant produced an exquisite finish in the corner. Albion showed their championship class this Tuesday by securing a thumping 4-0 win at Cardiff. In what was an excellent display from Valerian Ismail's side, the Baggies put in a composed and professional performance to pile the pressure on Bluebirds boss Mick McCarthy. A 5th-minute strike from Carlin Grant put Albion on the path to victory before Curtis Nelson scored an own goal. Alex Mowat made it 3 with a truly outstanding volley from the edge of the box. And in the closing stages, Matt Phillips made it 4 when he swept in a Grady Diangana cross. The result saw Baggies move back to the top of the championship, with Ismail's side still unbeaten in 10 league outings this season.
Now we have our ever-popular Sounds of Nature feature, which this week is an uninterrupted recording of a woodland and lagoon atmosphere recorded on Brownsea Island, Dorset. This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available
by the British Library.
Next on the agenda, we have Colin, who has for us a feature all about unusual superstitions.
Hello, I'm Colin Lawrence. Do you avoid walking under ladders or stepping on cracks in the pavement? Or are you far too rational to believe in old wives' tales? Superstition follows us everywhere. We unapologetically cross our fingers and toes and, well, whatever else we can, when we're in need of a little extra luck. While some of these rituals might sound a little odd, you won't catch us making any big commitments on Friday the 13th. Forget anti-aging creams. You can save yourself a fortune and stay forever young by carrying an acorn in your pocket. Owing to its long life, the oak tree is believed to provide longevity and also ward off illness. Now, whatever you do, don't eat lettuce if you want to have children. An old book on plant lore suggests that men should avoid salads if they want to start a family. It seems that lettuce is detrimental to childbearing because it's a sterile plant. Who knew? Anyway, you should never give gloves as a present. Well, you can, but make sure that you receive something in return, otherwise you'll both have bad luck. Gloves feature in a whole host of superstitions dating as far back as medieval times, when knights in armour, for some reason, wore a lady's glove in their helmets when competing in jousting tournaments. Everybody knows that it's bad luck to drop a glove and then pick it up yourself. The reasoning behind this relates to the custom of a lady deliberately dropping a glove in the hope that a prospective suitor will pick it up. It seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it, that opening an umbrella inside brings bad luck, since it presents a risk of breaking valuable items or poking someone in the eye. That's not the reason, apparently. It's because umbrellas shade us from the sun, they're thought to be somehow magical. So, when an umbrella's opened inside, out of the way of the sun's rays, guess what? It offends the sun god. I didn't even know there was a sun god, did you? Well, it seems there are lots. Most of them originate in Greek, Roman, and Egyptian mythology. So you learn something every day, don't you? Oh, and the next time you're off to attend an important meeting, don't forget to look out for a goat. Yes, that's right, a goat. Although goats have been associated with debauchery, lust, and the devil for thousands of years, they are also believed to absorb any evil or harm that may cross your path. And that's why it's considered good luck to encounter a goat when travelling to an important occasion. Ladies, let me ask you this. Do you ever get an annoying fold in your skirt when you've sat on it in a strange way? Well, you'll be pleased to discover that should this happen to you, you're in with more than a good chance of receiving a new dress. Yes, it was once a common belief that if the lower edge of a woman's skirt somehow became inexplicably turned up to form a kind of pocket, good fortune, such as the gift of a new dress, would come to the owner. Shh. Quiet, isn't it? An awkward silence means that an angel is passing over. This rather whimsical explanation for a lull in a conversation is attributed to Dylan Thomas's Portrait of the Artist, which includes the line, "A host of angels must be passing by. What a silence there is." On New Year's Eve in Spain, not everyone kisses as the clock strikes 12. Superstitious revellers make sure that they eat 12 grapes at midnight to ensure that they'll have 12 months of good luck. An old wives' tale says that the best day to go to hospital is Wednesday, and Monday is the best day to leave. You should avoid Saturday, which apparently is the worst day to arrive or leave, because it means that you'll soon be back. Now, here's a good trick if you can do it. Pass a newborn baby through a rind of a cheese. No, I'm not making this stuff up. In medieval England, expectant mothers made a groaning cheese, This was a large wheel of cheese that matured for 9 months as the baby grew. When the groaning time, or birth, came, the cheese would be shared out amongst the family. And when nothing but the outer rind was left, the baby would be passed through the wheel of cheese on christening day to be blessed with a long and prosperous life. And finally, do please remember to keep a hot cross bun for a year. Much like the tradition of saving a slice of wedding cake after the ceremony, this slightly odd superstition is supposed to bring good fortune. Hot cross buns were originally eaten at ancient pagan festivals, but without the cross, which was added much later by Christians to ward off evil spirits. Baked on Good Friday morning, a hot cross bun was displayed in the house for a year to ensure good luck. If it works, well, that's great, but it probably won't do your teeth much good if you actually try to eat it 12 months later.
How did you get on at this week's quiz? Well, now's the time to find out, as we head over to Mina, who asked for us the answers.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. Who said that our faces were older than our feet? And of course, it was Albert Einstein. Question 2. Where is the oldest clock on Earth? And the answer here is Salisbury Cathedral. Question 3. Which mammal is known to be at least 211 years old? And the answer, the bowhead whale. Question 4. What time did Levi Hutchins have to get up for work? And the answer here is 4 a.m. Question 5. What is used to regulate Big Ben's clock? And the answer here is old copper pennies. And finally, question 6. In what year was UK time standardised and called railway time? And the answer here is 1847. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to this week's Guess the Sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. Now, the sound you just heard was a recording of a purring cat. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we hear from Tanya, who reads for us some school day memories from the blind BBC journalist Peter White.
Hello, this is Tanya with some reminiscences about school days from BBC journalist Peter White, MBE, who's been blind since birth. Many of you may know Peter from In Touch, his regular Radio 4 programme for blind and partially sighted people. He is also president of Sounding's parent charity, the Talking News Federation. This article first appeared in the Guardian newspaper in a feature called The School Day I'll Never Forget. For Peter, the day he'll never forget is the time he hitchhiked 100 miles from his school for the blind in Worcester to his home in Winchester, as he recounts here. The best day of my school year was always the same, 29th of May. It was known as Founders' Day, which, in most schools with such pretensions, meant being forced to dress in your best clothes, sing a hymn in Latin, and then listen to some old bloke telling you how to live a good and righteous life. Doesn't sound promising, does it? Except that at our school, it was different. We may have had the Latin hymn, but after that, we were told we must leave the school and go wherever we wanted. Within legal limits, I suppose, though I don't ever remember that being spelled out. This may not sound that spectacular until you realise that this was a school for blind and almost blind children. You were also presented with 5 shillings, which I suppose was intended as a survival kit, but which we realised could buy 60-penny chews, or a dirty book from the top shelf of the newsagents, which the one boy with a bit of sight could read to you with the aid of a powerful magnifying glass. If you think that 60 years on, we live in a more liberal age when it comes to what blind children are encouraged to do, forget it. This would never happen now, but I'm delighted to say that my friends and I made the absolute best of it. For my first Founders' Day, aged 11, three of us first years somehow found our way to Dudley Zoo. I guess we must have caught the train. Methods of navigation are a bit of a blur, but somehow, once there, we must have found the dingo cage. Animal mad. The first thing I remember is leaning over the bars to get as close to them as possible. Being at boarding school, I was missing my dog. No, I didn't fall in, but inevitably my school cap fell off. Initially, the two dingoes approached it gingerly. Then, all at once, there was a snapping of teeth. The fight that ensued was deeply satisfying, interspersed as it was with the sounds of my detested school cap being torn to shreds. It was a suitably fitting climax to a gloriously anarchic day. We made a return trip to Dudley Zoo on Founders' Day 2 years later, now aged 13. We'd become rather blasé about the animals and were more entranced by the small funfair. Three of us commandeered a dodgem each, and although the general idea is that your cars crash into each other, the unpredictability of three dodgems being driven by blind drivers proved too much for the staff. We were politely, but firmly, ushered out of the zoo. My final use of the Founders Day freedoms was my boldest. With a totally blind friend, I decided to hitchhike home from Worcester to Winchester, well over 100 miles. I felt confident we could do the return trip in a day while having time to sample a slap-up meal cooked by my delighted mother. One slight flaw in this plan was that I omitted to warn my mother we were coming. When we arrived, oil-stained but unbowed, she was up a stepladder, stocking the larder. She claims almost to have fallen off, but once over the shock, she did indeed provide us with a plate of sausage, egg and chips. But that's as far as the prodigal son treatment went. I was told firmly that we'd better head back immediately before my dad got home, or there would be trouble. The return journey went all right until we got a little beyond Oxford, when the light began to fade and people became less willing to pick up two scruffy urchins carrying white canes. But our luck still held. We found our way to a police station where the officers were terrific. They drove us to the main road and then stopped cars until they found one that would take us back to Worcester. We arrived back after midnight, expecting the sky to fall in. I rang home, where my father's grumpiness turned to relief. Even more astonishing, when we got back to school, the headmaster, after a bit of harumphing, congratulated us on our initiative. My school days were by no means perfect. But if the job of a school is to prepare its disabled children for the rigours of life, Founders Day was a brilliant invention, now sadly missed.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sightless tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who, without their support, we would be unable to run this free service. Please note, the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us. Stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!